This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson, founder of Careering into Motherhood. Through our coaching programs, masterclasses, the community of 7,000 women over on our Facebook group, and this podcast, we aim for a world where motherhood and ambition can happily coexist. For more information about all the support we offer, including coaching programs and masterclasses, please see our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com, or find us on Facebook. Just look for the group Careering into Motherhood. This episode is all about redundancy. It is most definitely on the rise, and worryingly, it seems especially on the rise for women in lower paid and part-time roles, which typically will mean a lot of working mums. Some of our community who'd been made redundant recently gave me their raw and very real thoughts on how they're feeling.
On one hand, it was interesting because I knew it was coming. There was lots of changes happening within the organisation. And I worked for a big company. So, you know, I'd been there for 3 years. So there was a severance payout. But, you know, this is a roller coaster. And I think, you know, other times either I've taken voluntary redundancy, it's been more on my terms and the timing around it was on my terms. Now you just don't get that. And I'm part of a really supportive group on Guild called Fort. Followed and released talent. And on one hand, great support. On the other hand, just shows how many good people have been made redundant. And that's kind of scary.
I'm currently going through a redundancy while almost at the end of my maternity leave, totally out of the blue and unexpected from a job I've worked my whole career to get. I'm struggling to see the light at the end of the tunnel with a big mortgage, bills, and being a single mother. The prospect of getting another job, knowing I might have to shift industry, is very daunting. How do you deal with working in a new industry and not feeling like you're starting your career over again after 20 years?
I was mentally preparing for my return to work from maternity when I received the call to say my role was being made redundant. It really knocked me sideways. I felt frightened and alone, despite having a loving relationship and a great support network. I had zero confidence and my self-worth hit an all-time low. Redundancy has been likened to the grieving process. It's taken me months to get to a happier place with a lot of support along the way.
These are tough and very real situations, and I would certainly not want to whitewash over those or the way that redundancy makes you feel. But Eleanor Twaddle and I crossed paths for the first time a few years ago when she herself was out of work and having been made redundant. And at that time, she was looking to get back into the corporate world that she knew very well. However, Eleanor has just published her first book, and it's all about coming back from redundancy. She has lots of advice and tools to help people and to try and use it more as a positive force, something that I know is very hard, especially when you're in the middle of it. Eleanor, tell me a bit about why you now say that redundancy was the best thing that happened to you and how you're hoping this book can help others who are facing similar situations to yourself.
Over the years, what I've realised is it's about having that chance to rethink about who you are, what you're doing, what you want to do. And I had a career in corporate life for about 23 years, and I suddenly realised I'd just been in flow. I just thought that's who I was, that's what I was doing. I hadn't really stopped to think if I was enjoying it or not. I was just doing it. And so when I got made redundant a few years ago, it was that moment that I thought, okay, what's going on here? So yeah, it's been a bit of an exploratory couple of years, but I still think that from a well-being point of view, from a getting more out of life point of view, it's the best thing that happened.
Interesting. And I know at the start of your book, you do talk about this change curve, which anyone who's in the world of change communications will know very well. But for people who aren't, could you talk a little bit about that and the curve and where people might find themselves on it after redundancy?
Yeah. So the good old change curve, that if you've worked in corporate life and especially in change and comms, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did this amazing change curve, which really helps to explain grief and loss and, you know, how we get the news and we kind of digest it. And this curve that we go through to try and process what's happening to us, and we have to go into a bit of denial maybe, and we get down to a certain point and feel quite low, and then we start rationalizing and bringing ourselves out of that that position and move forward. So it certainly helps when change comes along in our lives, and it definitely helps from a losing your job point of view. But what I sort of realized was, especially, you know, my experience when I started really thinking about what's happening to me, it felt more like a sort of bowl of spaghetti. That's what the actual
drawing looked like. It's not a sort of nice smooth down and then up again.
Yes, exactly. Not quite like that. Although, you know, it's obviously progressive, but it's definitely not a beautiful curve. It was very much up and down and loop the loop. And just one day you're feeling good and you've got it and hopeful, and literally the next hour, something very small often triggers you. And it's usually like a really small, weird thing that just sends you over and makes you feel really bad again. So yeah, that change curve definitely helps because it's progressive and it means that, you know, you're going to get through this. Of course you are. And you're going to find solutions, and you're not going to be in the same place you are now, you know, this time next year. But it just feels like a spaghetti bowl of emotions at the time.
And I want to talk, especially for our listeners, and I know you yourself as a mum and a working mum, I think, you know, we will tend to take it even, I can't say even harder because, you know, I'm not talking to somebody who isn't a mother, but there is definitely that additional overlay when you've got a family and responsibilities to them. And whether it's, and you talk about this in the book, don't you? Whether it's a sense of guilt or having let your family down, or just that, oh shit, how am I actually going to make ends meet now? Because it's not just me going out on a Friday night. I can go and crash at a friend's. You know, as you get older, everyone takes on more responsibilities, be they financial or personal or emotional. Can you talk a little bit about your personal experience there, or, you know, the people that you work with who, again, have other people relying or dependent on them?
Yes, it's really odd, that guilt feeling. But it's definitely something that I felt really strongly, that I just remember distinctly getting the call to say, you know, you've not got the job, because I had to sort of reapply for jobs. I didn't have to, I guess I could have taken redundancy, but they offered me to reapply for jobs. And getting the call that you've not been successful, therefore you're being made redundant, the very first feeling as I put the phone down was huge overwhelm of guilt. I just thought, oh my goodness, I have ruined my family's Christmas. It was a couple of days before Christmas. And, you know, I had messages from them saying, good luck, mummy, you know, we know you can get the job, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've let them down so badly. And then you go through a whole weird emotion of, did I do something wrong? Could I have worked harder? Was it me? Was I not good enough? You know, all of that stuff goes through your mind. And it's just this whole emotion that you've got of letting people down. But actually, the message, I guess, when I worked through it, was just stop, because look around you, you've not let anybody down. You know, when I stopped and looked, and it was all just, you know, people supporting me and encouraging me and on my side, they didn't feel like I'd let them down. It was just me, my internal voice, but it was very loud voice. Shouted a lot.
Yeah. Yes. And then you talk about the LTT, don't you? The line to take. Which is not just, the thing I came across to me reading that part of your book was that it's not actually just about spin or putting on a brave face. There's actually something quite deep-rooted psychologically for yourself in having a line to take. Can you talk about, explain what the line to take is?
Yeah. Well, Jane, I know your background in comms as well. We love a good LTT in the comms world. Line to take is your sort of stand that you will absolutely hold on to and not move away from in any way when asked questions or anything like that. Mostly in corporate life, it's around media. And it struck me at one point when I'd been made redundant and I was busily telling people, yeah, I've lost my job. Struck me like, oh my goodness, I need a line to take, because I'm making this up every single time someone's asking me. It was actually draining me, because I was having to think about, I was actually, you know, thinking about the answer. If someone say, how are you doing? I would be like, oh, well, yeah, I'm this, I'm that. You know, it was actually using up energy just responding, which is really odd, but it did. And I started to understand that actually I'm not owning this message. And it was the day that I'd had a bad day and somebody just happened to say, you know, how are you doing? And I shared it. I was like, yeah, I'm not great at the moment, blah, blah, blah. Literally the next week, I felt a lot better. I'd done some work and really, you know, felt like I was getting back on track. But this person had already told three other people, oh, she's not in a great place, blah, blah, blah. And it was all from the right place, but this is what happened. And suddenly I had these two other people contact me going, oh, I've heard you're not in a great place. Are you all right? And it was a week later, I'd moved on. And that was the moment I thought, I have got to own this better because I'm fine. I'm just that one day I was having a bad moment. I don't want everyone to think that this is a complete, you know, disaster. So yeah, having a line to take and owning the message of what you want someone to kind of know about your situation. And it does sound a bit contrived, but it does actually help you. It really helps you to restore energy, to keep things in place for you, to so that when you are ready to go out and apply for jobs and get back out there, you already feel like you are performing from a very strong position. So it is a bit of a strange concept, but it really works. And it's sort of like, it's your first moment that you can control and own something. So just having that one sentence that if someone asks you how you're doing, you can say, yeah, you know, it's not great, but I'm hopeful and I'm actually looking for jobs in this position. Because the other thing it does, people can work hard for you if you've got a really clear message about what you're looking for. And they're almost like your marketing tool. So if you can say, it's not great, but I'm looking for jobs being a project manager now, they will start looking for you subconsciously. So that's the other reason why a line to take is really powerful.
Yeah, it really is. I love that part of the book. And then you do go on to talking about, you know, you say it's okay to have some downtime, to have some time to reset, taking some time just for yourself, but also recognizing if that's gone a bit too far and if you do need some counseling or some more sort of medical type help. But you do talk about what you can do to help yourself during this sort of interim period.
Yes. And I think that kind of wallow time is important. Definitely have a little bit of, you know, you can feel sorry for yourself. That's okay for a little while. But I think it's also important to then grab hold of it, you know, and say, right, okay, I've had enough now. I've felt sorry for myself a little bit. I've had a bit of a sulk. Now it's time to move on. And that's the difference between real depression and the mental health issues that actually you do need to seek professional help. And you'll know, you know yourself what you're feeling, whether it is that and you want some further help, or a good check-in with yourself to say, am I just sulking? Am I just like a bit scared? Because if that's all it is, actually, you've got this, you know, you can take the next step forward to go, right, okay, what can I do about it? So there is a massive difference there between how you're feeling. So that's the time. That's what I mean by just stop and check in with yourself and go, right, what is going on for me right now? Because I don't think we do. We sort of bundle it all up into one big bundle. Like I remember sitting on a sofa, you know, 3 a.m. in the morning crying, thinking, oh my God, I must be depressed, you know, and it was actually that day I thought, no, you're not. It was almost having like a conversation with myself, like, you are not depressed. Like, you know what depression is. You've had people around you. That is not what you are. You're sulking, Tweddle. Get off the sofa. Get on with it. You're sulking because things aren't going very well. So, you know, I had a little word and that's when I thought, right, I've got to help myself here. How am I going to help myself? Am I actually doing anything really productive to help me get out of this situation? So yeah, there is a big difference.
So I want to go on to this productive, because again, your book isn't just a nice, fluffy, make me feel better type book. You've got some really, really practical tools that people can use to help themselves figure out what next. One of the things I loved was this idea of your life dashboard. Can you talk, because again, some of our listeners will be going through redundancy or potentially facing it right now or in future. What practical advice can you give them? How do they go about figuring out where next, what next?
Yeah, so I mean, I'd come straight out of corporate life. And to be honest, I was probably a bit blinkered to this whole world of personal development, which is ironic, considering how much sort of learning and development we probably got spent on us in corporate life. But I wasn't very open-minded to it. So I started from a very basic point. And I watched a few sort of life coaching webinars and that kind of thing. They talked about the life wheel and how you can look at all parts of your life to find questions or find ideas and solutions that perhaps you hadn't thought of before. So I had a look at that, but the life wheel felt a bit overwhelming at that point. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't think I'm quite in that space to look at all of this. So I actually scribbled it on a piece of paper like a dashboard, because I felt like I get that there's different components in parts of your life that you're just trying to juggle. But what if all of those components, we feel like it's a dashboard that we can turn up certain points when we need to and turn them down, but never switch them off. So it's almost like going through, okay, where am I with my health? Where am I with my wealth? Where am I with my community and hobbies? Where am I with my career? Where am I with my family and friends? And going through those and just exploring, well, how am I feeling about this? And in some parts, when I did this little exercise, and it's not a massive exercise, it takes like 20 minutes or something of just brainstorming, like what comes up when you ask the question, you know, what am I doing with my life? I was actually really surprised at some points, because in sort of interests and hobbies and stuff outside work, I had like nothing. And I was like looking at it going, oh my goodness, what am I been doing? I don't know. I guess obviously I've been a mother, yes, and I've been working, yes. But I mean, really, is that it? So it did, just that little exercise sort of brought up lots of thoughts to me. And then having this visual representation in my head of something I could turn up and say, well, look, don't put pressure on yourself to have everything at a 10 and everything green and it all rosy on the dashboard. It's not like that. Dial down some things so that you can dial up. So career actually got dialed down a bit for a while. And I was like, look, just calm it all down. Let's just take time to think what's going on. And that gave me permission to take a couple of projects that weren't probably what I wanted to do. They weren't like, you know, a huge big career step, but they brought in a little bit of money while I just thought about other stuff that was going on. But having that visual representation in my head of me dialing up things and down things helped me to understand why I was making a decision. And so don't put pressure on myself later. Say, oh, why? What am I doing? I'm throwing my career away. No, you're not. You dialed up family and friends. You dialed up health. That's why you're doing what you're doing. So that's definitely a first good step, just to explore all parts of your life, but not feel like you have to have everything shiny, because it doesn't work like that. But you're always going to have a priority. You're always going to have something that you're focusing on more than other parts. And then the check-in is that right? Is that what you want?
And that's interesting. I had asked some of the members of the Careering into Motherhood community over on Facebook. I told them I was interviewing you and what kind of questions might people who've been made redundant want to put to you. And on that note, someone asked whether career breaks, especially at the moment, should be as short as possible to ensure that you can get back into work as quickly as possible, because right now in the pandemic, whether things are going to be looked upon negatively if you've got, you know, say you decide, well, actually, my health has been horrific, so for the next 12 months, I'm really going to get fit and eat quinoa every day. is that, in your opinion, is it better to take as short as possible a career break, or to just take time for yourself and you'll know when the right time is to get back to what you want to do?
My space is all around owning exactly what you need to do. So I've worked with people who, when we've done this kind of work at the beginning, they've lost their job and they're searching, and we've done the finance, we've done the figures, and we know, you know, if money's going to be all right, because realistically, that is the driver that kind of often makes us make a decision or not. People can dial up the health. That's a great example that you've used there, because actually that's so much more important than anything else. Career breaks are kind of all in our head. That's my opinion. I think we make them whatever we want to make them. So I didn't take much time out when I had my baby. So I came back to work after 6 months, but that was just because I wanted to. But then what I would say is I was out of work for 6 months after being made redundant. And yet again, two years later, when I was contracting, I didn't work for 6 months again because we moved house and I just couldn't get back into it. I lost my whole flow again. It didn't make a single bit of difference. I was still getting approached for jobs that I'm a specialist in, I was still getting, nobody asked me, to be honest. Not one person said, what have you been doing in this gap? You know, it just doesn't, people don't really care. If you think about what they want when they're looking for somebody to come and do a job, they're looking for the fastest solution to fill that vacancy. That's what they're wanting. I mean, Jane, this is what you do for a living, but that's what my opinion is anyway. And so if you can fill that gap for them and put yourself in that position, I think that's all they're looking for. So I'd never make excuses about career breaks. That's part of you. And you've probably learned and grew and done your thinking, or whatever you've been doing in that time is all part of you. So definitely just own your space. And, you know, I was talking to a lady called Laura Garwood the other day, and she does returners coaching, and you can upgrade. You know, you can come back into something so much more because you're more confident, you're more clear on what you want, you're more articulate. So yeah, never apologize, you know, internally for what you're doing. You own that space. You made the right decision for you at that moment, and enjoy that. And don't worry about what happens next. You can own every single step. But that's the sort of work that I mean when I'm saying, like, work on yourself, work on your confidence, work on your internal dialogue. That stuff gets you far further than anything that, you know, a gap on a CV will do. People just don't care. They just want to know about you and what you can do for them.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you on that. And I think a lot of the time when it becomes really hard to justify a career break or time out, it tends to be, as you say, because it is somewhere in your head, you don't feel confident, or you don't feel able to have owned that time. I kind of marvel when people struggle or ask, you know, what should I put? I've had a year or 2 years while I raised my children. You know, I don't know what to put, because there are, don't get me wrong, there are recruiters out there and hiring managers who look at that and go, oh no, this person, you know, is so out of date. It's like, hang on a sec. Have you ever tried spending 24 hours with a toddler? Just the resilience and the life skills that you've developed, communication skills, etc. But you know, that's not belittling anyone who does struggle with that, because I still feel that a lot of recruiters and employers don't value, you know, the skills that mums develop or parents develop when they're looking after a human life. But one of the other questions, which is much more related to sort of the current climate, Eleanor, so I don't know, you know, how far you've thought about, because I'm assuming when your book was written, you know, you weren't anticipating a global pandemic, but obviously the current climate is leading to lots of companies shedding jobs. And somebody's asked whether it is best in the current climate to stick to what you know, as in what your skills and experience are in, versus going for something new, and whether taking voluntary redundancy while on maternity leave would be a good opportunity buy yourself some time to try something new.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably not the answer people want, but the only answer is, you've got the answer. Only you can know what's right for you. But I do think that there's opportunity out there. So we're all seeing headlines of job losses. There's not much talk about how much reinvention is going on and how much businesses are actually transforming and creating, you know, innovation that's coming up with new ways of working and all this stuff. That's actually happening as well. And I'm seeing a lot of that, you know, a lot of people actually rethinking how they work, rethinking opportunity. One, because maybe they have to, but two, because they want to. Either way, they've made a choice. So if you want to, again, it comes back to building up that confidence, building up that absolute, I am going to do this no matter what. It might not be overnight, but I'm going to do it, and being clear on that. So I work a bit with airlines. Obviously, I used to work for Virgin Atlantic for a while, and so obviously close to my heart, and cabin crew, obviously, and airline staff as well, don't have that option of just saying, well, this is who I am, I'm going to just apply for that job again. It's not there. So they're having to look at who they are and look beyond the job title. I always say to people, you're not a job title. You were brought into that company to do the job because of various things, but every single one of you do it in different ways. So look at what goes beyond the job title and then repackage it. And if you've got that energy to do it in a different way, that's the step you take out and do something different. You've got to have energy for it. I always sort of say to people, have an explore an ideas session with yourself or somebody else and think of all these sort of crazy job titles that you would love if they came tomorrow to you. If someone came to you tomorrow and said, here, do X, and you'd be like, oh my goodness, this is a dream job. What crazy job titles would they be? And then look beyond it. Why is that working for you? What's going on there that would be a dream job? And then why not set yourself a target to say, right, I'm going to do this either for myself, I'll set up as a freelancer, or I'll find an organization that's very closely offering this. Why not? Because I believe that 2021 and onwards, we're just going to see reinvention and people creating things, because of course we are. We're not all going to be just sitting here waiting for the government to come up with a scheme. We're not. We're going to be out there doing stuff ourselves, finding opportunity. How can I help people? What would people pay for? What are people really needing right now? And what have I got energy for? So if you start asking yourself those questions, you get really sort of all sorts of ideas. And now we've all gone online, it's even better, you know, for us. If we're at home and we've got parameters that we're working in, we can go online with it. So I'm sort of trying to get people into an excited position, even though it probably doesn't feel like that right now.
Yes. Yeah, no, I really agree. And it's one of the things that I I have talked about quite a lot on social media, is that, you know, these headlines where it's all about how women are once again the victim of the pandemic. And it's like, actually, yes, of course, there have been some really, really saddening stories. And of course, a lot of women, more women than men, are being furloughed and made redundant and so on. But, you know, that is fact. And that's actually part of the past. But if we look at the future and look at reinvention, exactly as you say, we have the biggest opportunity right now to apply for any job we want that we see advertised, because no employer can turn around and say, sorry, this job has to be done 5 days a week, 10 hours a day in an office somewhere and on, you know, a commute away. That just is blown out the water. As you're saying, we, you know, we have to own this. We have to go for it. But that's a lot easier said than done. I do understand.
Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I'm quite transparent with, this isn't sort of plain sailing for me either. I almost kind of have to do the work every single day myself to get myself into the position of like, oh, I've got this, it's fine. Because, you know, we're all in this position. So I'm with you. It's not easy at all. But what I take sort of energy from is it's possible, because I see people doing it and I think, well, if they can do it, why can't I? So yeah, it's never overnight. It's never a simple solution, but it doesn't mean it's not possible.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. I have one final question for you, which is, you know, partly linked to what we've just been talking about, which is, you know, did you ever see yourself, let's say 5 years ago, 4 years ago, did you see yourself as an author? Did you, was it always part of the game plan to write a book?
Definitely not.
There we go. There we go. So it's proof that it can be done. I think it's just been, was it, I saw on somewhere part of the FT kind of top reads or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations. It's great. And I think, you know, it's such a useful book for now, or for, you know, for the next, don't know how many months that we're going to be going through a lot, seeing a lot more headlines about redundancy. So thank you very much, Eleanor. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on.
My thanks to Eleanor and to the women at the start of the podcast, who all gave their very different perspectives on facing redundancy. Although this interview was very upbeat, I don't want to make light of just how hard it is to be facing redundancy at any time, but especially during the pandemic and at this time of year. We do have a lot of other resources through the Facebook group and through our podcasts, whether that's tips on CV writing, using LinkedIn, career coaching with Amy Shepherd, resilience with Renee Huey Lipton, returning to work with Lisa Unwin, using your network to help you find work and meet your career objectives with Viv Groskop. And as I say, there are 7,000 women in our Careering into Motherhood Facebook group, and they are there to help support you if you need it. You can post a question, you can ask for help, you can ask for advice, just something you want to share. There are 7,000 women there, and they make for some really broad shoulders, so you don't need to face this on your own. Until next time, thanks very much for listening.